The new Portals of Prayer devotional Bible is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. This devotional resource contains the entire English Standard Version of the Bible with 700 devotions from Portals of Prayer. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or learn more about Portals of Prayer devotional Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, Portals of Prayer devotional Bible. I don't imagine this happens very often. It certainly doesn't happen here in the United States. Of course, Martin Luther is not as big a deal in the United States as he is in Germany. There's no confusion there between Martin Luther and Martin Luther King. So it is not surprising, perhaps, that a German political party, one that is considered extremist right, even nationalistic or neo-Nazi, has decided to put the visage of the 16th century reformer on some of its political posters. It claims, "I would vote for NDP, that's National Democratic Party. I cannot do otherwise," claims the picture of Martin Luther. It also goes along with that party's slogan, "Defend the homeland." What's going on here, and why is this German political party using Martin Luther? Is it a legitimate use of Luther's ideas and image? Joining us to talk about it on this Tuesday afternoon, Dr. Uwe Simonetto. He's a former religion editor for United Press International, founder and emeritus director of the Center for Lutheran Theology and Public Life, and author of the book, The Fabricated Luther, Refuting Nazi Connections and Modern Myths. Uwe, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
How common is it for politicians, political parties, to use Luther or his image during election time in Germany?
Not very common. And the particular one that you're referring to, the National Democratic Party, which is a sort of neo-Nazi party, is a very minor operation. I mean, it's they never have get enough votes to even get one MP into the Bundestag, the federal parliament. So this has to be seen. Obviously, there have been moments when Luther has been misused, but I mean, not like that, not in this sort of sense. Except for either very right wing or very left wing parties. But here, this is a very right wing, extremist right wing party.
So, what kind of status does the 16th century reformer Martin Luther have in German culture, generally speaking? How would you describe that?
Well, it's a national hero. He's a national hero. He is. I don't think many Germans nowadays are well versed in Lutheran theology because, unfortunately, the pastors have all gone and wavered. Luther is the towering giant in Germany, there's no doubt about it, especially because, well, not because he was the great nationalist. By the way, let me throw something in here to clarify something here. Luther was no nationalist because nationalism in the 16th century did not exist. Neither did, by the way, anti-Semitism as a racist operation. There was no racism. All this came with the Enlightenment much, much later. Luther was a German. He saw himself as a German culturally, but he knocked the Germans more than he knocked anybody else in his anger sometimes because they weren't faithful to the gospel. But he was no nationalist. So to use Luther in a political sense, obviously the Nazis did that. The communists, by the way, used Luther's nemesis, Thomas Münzer, as the sort of hero of Germany. Of course, nobody else knew Thomas Münzer, so we were safe there. But it's not common. It makes me very angry. I saw that picture. But the news story that you're referring to here, I mean, it's a very, very long piece. I think that is out of proportion. I mean, we're talking about a tiny political sect here.
So tell us about this party, the National Democratic Party. What kind of platform do they have?
The National Democratic Party is the product of a merger of post-war quasi-neo-Nazi parties, or parties where old Nazis all congregated. Okay, then immediately after the war, the predecessor party, the German Reich Party, or German Empire Party, had indeed a few MPs in parliament. But then when they merged into this National Democratic Party, they never managed to get anybody into federal parliament, although I think 11 state assemblies at one point or another had the odd National Democratic MP. And usually, or mainly, in Eastern Germany, because Eastern Germany, of course, had never been, if you will, denazified as we were in the West. You know, there wasn't this process of teaching children and teaching pupils at high school what Nazism was all about and what it had done to Germany and, of course, to the world. The Eastern Germans were taught that they were, since they were now under communist rules, they were de facto communists, and therefore they were persecuted by the Nazis. And, you know, it's total nonsense, of course, but they were safe. They weren't Nazis. They were not tinged by the Nazi past as we were. And now, of course, when 30 years ago the East German regime collapsed, you had these people there, and they were more susceptible to neo-Nazi doctrines, simply because they had no democratic grounding, except those who were in the church and who were active in the church, where of course you had elections, etc. But that is one of the issues, and the other issue is, I mean, there is another right-wing party, it's the Alliance for Germany, which is much larger, and it's actually the largest opposition party, and it's often called, hardline or extreme nationalist. I don't think it is, but it does have extreme nationalists and extreme right-wingers in its ranks, but it also has some bona fide, most of them are bona fide conservatives, most of its members, and most of its MPs are bona fide conservatives, and I do wish we had a proper conservative party rather than these people. That's an additional problem, but where Luther is concerned, to use Luther in a sort of sentence to stir up anti-Jewish sentiments, etc., that you would only have in the National Democratic Party. And even these guys have to be very, very careful with what they're saying. They would not come out straight away saying that they're anti-Semites, because they would be immediately stopped by the German equivalent of the FBI, which is called the Office for the Protection of the Constitution. They have to be very careful not to make unconstitutional statements.
So anti-Semitism, formal anti-Semitism, is illegal in Germany?
It is, yes, and there is actually an office to fight anti-Semitism. Problem is, there is a rise of anti-Semitism in Germany, mainly, not exclusively, but mainly because of the influx of Muslim refugees who are, and of course, of not only refugees, of course, Turks who came there as migrant laborers and being Muslims. And so there's an they are stirring up. You have a lot of very frequently attacks against Jews wearing the kippah in public. And that happens very often. Then you have, in addition to that, a form of hidden anti-Semitism, which you have elsewhere in the world. It's a left-wing form of anti-Semitism. These are left-wingers who are against Israel and who are defending the rights of the Palestinians and all that sort of thing. And they use anti-Semitic harassment. But we're talking about tiny minorities here, but if you take the sum of that, then you have maybe something like 20 or something percent of anti-Semitic outrages, you see, or sentiments. It shouldn't be at all in Germany, especially not in Germany, and Germans are quite ashamed of this happening. And then, of course, you have in Eastern Germany, those undercover neo-Nazis, like just the other day when there was an attack during an attack on a synagogue in the city of Halle. A guy nobody had even noticed before tried to during a service in a synagogue, tried to charge the throw a bomb into the synagogue and kill all the Jews in there. But the door held, and then he ran outside and fired away and killed a woman who was just a bystander, not Jewish, and then ran across the street into a Turkish restaurant and then shot somebody there. But, you know, this is the equivalent of what you have here in the United States. Charlottesville is an example. You do have nut cases. In a nation of 82 million or 81 million people, has its fair share of nut cases like America or like Britain or France, you know.
Dr. Uwe Simonetto is our guest. We're talking about a German political party using Martin Luther's image. When we come back, we'll discuss a little research from the University of Jena and the state of Thuringia. Stay tuned. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. by becoming a congregational sponsor. When your church pledges $1,000, we'll publicize your congregation on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal. Learn more on the support donate page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Become an Issues, Etc. congregational sponsor in 2020.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Greetings and God's blessings from Faith Lutheran Church and Preschool in Marinette, Wisconsin. It is our sincere hope and prayer that you would be edified by God's Word as we gather together to receive His gifts in the historic liturgy of the Church. Join us Sundays for divine service at 9 a.m. at the corner of County Road T and Irving Street, just a block south of the roundabout here in Marinette. You can contact us at 715-735-6506 on Facebook or at our website, www.faithmarinette.org.
Casting Christ's net on the Internet. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's Word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. We're talking about a German political party using Martin Luther's image. Dr. Uwe Simonetto is our guest, author of the book, The Fabricated Luther, Refuting Nazi Connections and Modern Myths. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc. Uwe, there's a 2018 study cited in the RNS story from Friedrich Schiller University in Jena, found that 19% of the respondents in Thuringia agreed with extreme right-wing statements like National Socialism also had its good sides, and then there was a greater support. 39% of the respondents were favorable to some ethnocentric statements like the foreigners come here only to take advantage of our welfare state. How do you explain this?
Well, the state of Thuringia was an East German state, okay? So they, and there was a very strong Nazi, the Nazis were particularly strong in that state during World War II. And then, of course, the state was occupied by the Soviet by the Soviets, and then, of course, it became a German communist run. And so all these horrific prejudices that were carried over from the Nazi days remained there. And unfortunately, when Germany was reunified, I think one of the biggest mistakes West Germans made was that they did not decommunize the East German states as we in the West were denazified. So now you had, they kept the old history teachers and all that sort of thing, who were communists mainly. And so that you have had a sort of an underground of diffuse nationalist, xenophobic sentiments in Eastern Germany, and specifically in Thuringia and also in the eastern part of Saxony, that has never been addressed and never been properly eradicated. And the only way to eradicate this is, of course, by education of the young, and they have failed to do that. It's quite a shameful thing. And, you know, the state of Thuringia is the state also where Luther actually came from. Luther studied at the University of Vienna, for example. You know, and Bach came from Eisenach, you see. That is in the state of Thuringia. So you have that. So, I'm quite sure this study by the University of Vienna is quite correct. It's only, these are the larger picture here is that the reunification of Germany has not really been totally accomplished or completed in those 30 years because of massive failures on the side of the, if you will, conquering Western Germans who did not do the same job with Eastern Germans that the Allies did with us. We're saying, well, wait a minute, you know, teaching us democracy, teaching us, and teaching is about the European dreams, European ideas, teaching us to accept foreigners and feel as I would. I mean, I grew up in that atmosphere. I can go to France, I can go to Britain, I can go to Holland and feel at home. And don't feel threatened by the French or the Dutch or the Poles, for that matter. In the lower ranks of Eastern Germany, you don't have that. I mean, they still have a resentment against the foreigners, a resentment against Europe. Mind you, they are a minority, even these 19-20% that they mentioned, they are a minority, but they do exist.
So it sounds as though, whereas Western Germany was denazified intentionally by the Allies when the communists took over the eastern part of the country, they essentially just, the citizenry was just forcibly traded Nazism out for communism, and those Nazi ideas were never fully addressed in East Germany.
No, that's precisely it. Well, you might add to that the communists, in order to get the sympathy of the citizens, also told them that they, of course, were not responsible for the Nazi background or Nazi past. That was an exclusively a West German thing because they were now communists, they were now socialists, and so therefore, and since the Nazis fought the socialists, so obviously they are fellow, by definition, they are our fellow persecuted people, and therefore on the good side of history.
There is the obligatory mention in the RNS piece of the 1543 treatise on the Jews and their lies written late in Luther's life. How would you set that document in historical perspective, especially given the claim that many make in kind of the far right for Luther's ideas in there?
In the historical perspective, first of all, the anti-Jewish writings came late in Luther's life, and he was frustrated that after he had cleared up the gospel for them, they didn't accept it. That's one thing. Then he did suddenly accept the lies that has been handed down through the centuries, that the Jews kidnapped and murdered Christian children for sacrifice. So he accepted that, and this is when suddenly this anti-Jewish sentiment came forth, which we have to be clear about this. The Lutheran Church, even his contemporaries, did not accept. I mean, there's a very, very famous case of Andreas Osiander. He was the Lutheran reformer in Nuremberg. Interestingly, Nuremberg, which was later became the bastion of Nazism, but he was a Hebrew professor there, and of course a reformer. And he denounced Luther for his anti-Jewish writings. The Lutheran Church did not perpetuate this thing, the anti-Jewish sentiments of Martin Luther. And it was actually a union pastor, was a court preacher at in Berlin. Berlin, the Prussians were not Lutherans. The Prussian royal family wasn't Lutheran. They were Reformed. Who dug these things up and published them. And then, of course, when the Nazis came to power, they picked those writings up, and misused them, of course. And so that is the history of the anti-Jewish thing. You have to go back. If you go back in history, I mean, there was a guy, a very famous Jewish convert to Catholicism, 100 years before Luther, who actually cooked up all these lies about his own people and suggested that Jewish books be burned, etc., etc., etc. It's a very sad state of affairs. Why they picked this one up on Luther all the time baffles me, because Luther did not say gas the Jews or burn the Jews, whereas the Roman Catholic Church with the Inquisition burned them by the hundreds of thousands, you know. But they're not being numbered with this horrific charge of being precursors of the Holocaust.
So at the end of the RNS piece, there is a statement made by a scholar who has studied Luther's views here, saying Luther was also an anti-Semite. It is a deeply complex legacy, I think, that sparks such potent reactions. Can we classify Luther as an anti-Semite?
No, definitely not. He was anti-Jewish religiously. An anti-Semite is a racist. You know, an anti-Semite by definition is also somebody who is against Palestinians or all the other Semites running around. He's a racist. Racism in Luther's day did not exist. It came up like nationalism and any of the other things during the Enlightenment and the French Revolution. Luther was not anti-Semitic. He very clearly said he wished for nothing more than being able to baptize a Jew. Well, anti-Semites wouldn't be happy to baptize Semites and embrace them as brothers. So this is all nonsense, and this is this sloppy form of scholarship that transpires. We have it here in America, as you know. We just say, well, you know, because Luther made anti-Jewish statements, the anti-Semitism of the 20th century can be traced back to Luther, which of course is nonsense.
We're talking about a German political party using Martin Luther's image. Dr. Uwe Simonetto is our guest. He is author of the book Fabricated Luther, Refuting Nazi Connections and Modern Myths. Thanks to Pastor Christian Teves and Trinity Lutheran Church in Okmulgee, Oklahoma, for renewing their membership in our congregational sponsorship program. Most churches are in the budget planning process for next year right now. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. When your confessional Lutheran church pledges $1,000 to Issues, etc. in 2020, we'll promote your congregation on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues, etc. journal. Learn more about becoming an Issues, etc. congregational sponsor at the support donate page at issuesetc.org. Well, with that look at kind of the more radical right of Germany's political scene, when we come back, we'll get the general political climate in Germany from Dr. Uwe Simonetto. Stay tuned.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide Word and Sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Uwe Simonetto is our guest. We're talking about a German political party using Martin Luther's image. Uwe, if you would, how would you describe the general political climate in Germany today?
The political climate in Germany tends to be, I would say, 80-90% of the Germans could not be considered anti-Semitic in any way. The political climate tends to be a little more to the liberal side than I would welcome, but it's a very liberal political climate. It is very cosmopolitan. It's open to Europe and very open. It's the leader of Europe, and it embraces globalism or globalization, which causes, of course, some problems, but that's the climate. And so now you have in Germany, much less than in other Western countries, a right-wing opposition, a backlash. But it's tiny, it's minute, the backlash. For the time being, it's minute. There is this, as I said, there's this larger right-wing party, but which makes it very clear that they are actually not anti-Semites or racists or any of this, I guess. There are only one or two of their leading members that are. But normally, you have much less anti-Semitism than, for example, in France, because in France you have a larger, very violent segment of Arabs coming, hailing from North Africa mainly, who are very anti-Jewish and therefore attack synagogues and Jewish shops and all that sort of thing. So in Germany is actually, but you see, they're self-castigating. It's another thing. When you have a party like that, when you have some idiots printing poster showing Luther saying he would vote for the NPD, which of course is total nonsense, then the whole country flies into a rage and says, no, not us. We're all for the Jews and all that thing. If there's an attack on a synagogue, you have thousands and thousands and thousands of people descending upon that synagogue and putting flowers and candles outside and saying prayers and singing songs. This is, I find this actually, the religion news service story, very upsetting because, I mean, they're distorting the image of my country. I am a German citizen, of my country, in a heinous way, because they're taking, it's like saying Charlottesville represents all of America, and every American by consequence is basically suspect of being a racist or a left-winger or a right-winger or something like that. And it's the same sort of thing. And it upsets, of course, some of us Germans as much as it would upset you to be tainted with the cross of these fiends who run around and shoot children or do any of these things. Instead of accepting the fact that, unfortunately, because of original sin, we also have some heavy-duty nutcases with some heavy-duty criminal instincts. And that is exactly what we have here.
With only a minute, Uwe, you said at the beginning of our conversation that the 16th century reformer Martin Luther was no nationalist. What did you mean by that?
Well, because there were no nations in those days, in a sense. People in the 16th century did not identify with their nation. They identified with their faith. They identified ethnically, maybe as Germans, if you spoke the same language, all right, so then you were German, but not nationalism. It is this hatred against other nations and against neighbors came much, much later. You had sovereigns fighting each other, and, you know, 17th century, of course, in Germany was horrific because of that. But it was not, there it was no instinct of, I'm a German, therefore I'm superior to the Frenchman or an Italian or a Swede. That is something that came out of the Enlightenment and the colonization that followed and all these things. It had nothing to do with 16th century thinking. The 16th century thinking, and people actually saw themselves as Christians or non-Christians, basically. And then, of course, as Lutheran or Reformed Christians versus Catholic or Roman Catholic Christians, but not as superior race versus an inferior race or country. You see, it's simply that came out of the Enlightenment.
Dr. Uwe Simonetto is a former religion editor for United Press International, founder and emeritus director of the Center for Lutheran Theology and Public Life, author of the book, The Fabricated Luther, Refuting Nazi Connections and Modern Myths. You can find out more about The Fabricated Luther at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours and ask for The Fabricated Luther, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Uwe, thank you very much.
Thanks much.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we'll talk sex, gender, and gender theory with Glenn Stanton, Director of Family Formation Studies for Focus on the Family. Then we'll discuss the future of the Roman Catholic Church. Dr. Corey Moss, Assistant Professor of History at Hillsdale College, has written an interesting article for Touchstone Magazine titled Reformation Redux. He says there are three factors that make the Roman Church ripe for reformation. We'll find out what they are in hour two of Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.